Shana Tova. Gilda Shepherd's award-winning documentary film, Since I've Been Down, begins in 1997 with a description of how a car full of teenagers, members of a gang, out in the middle of the night, mistook another car full of teenagers for members of a rival gang and began shooting, leaving one person dead. Flashing forward, in the second scene, we then see a young African-American man dressed in prison-issued clothing, standing on a stage, giving a speech. Here's what he says. My name is Kamonte Carter, and I am currently serving a life sentence for a gang-related drive-by that happened 9 years ago. My victim was innocent. He was also a student who was attending college. His name was Corey Pittman. At this time, I would like to apologize to the Pittman family because I have only now begun to understand that the enjoyment of life once taken away can never be replaced. And I am sorry. 24 years and counting from that fateful night in 1997, Kamonte Carter still lives inside a Washington state prison today. Unless our state's laws change, he will be there for the rest of his life with no chance of parole. This, regardless of the fact that at the time of the shooting, he was only 2 months past his 18th birthday. This, regardless of the fact that he and a whole generation of African-American youth who grew up in the Hilltop and East Side neighborhoods of Tacoma in the 80s and 90s faced impossible odds with poverty and poor educational opportunities. Many were recruited into California gangs and used to sell drugs and guns from a young age. In Kamonte's case, he had joined a gang at age 11. All this, despite the fact that Kamonte Carter has said that over time, the denial and old way of thinking he came to prison with evolved into a deep understanding of the pain and destruction he had caused. He has grown into a most self-aware human being, committed to his own betterment and continued growth, and helping others learn, and building bridges. In 2013, working with the Black Prisoners Caucus, Carter started an educational program called TEACH that now operates across multiple Washington state prisons, through which incarcerated people can take four-credit college courses. A big part of the goal of that program is to remind these incarcerated individuals of their own humanity, to rehumanize, as it were, to give them a shot at rehabilitation and repair. If Kamonte Carter had committed exactly the same crime while standing on a sidewalk or in a parking lot or anywhere else, he might have already served his full sentence and been released back into society. But because he shot his weapon out of the window of a moving car, Carter is not eligible for parole in our state. The law he was sentenced under was intended to target gang violence. Practically, this and other similar laws have meant that young men of color, in particular, are disproportionately overrepresented in Washington state prisons. In our state, for a whole host of reasons, not everyone has the same shot at redemption. Not everyone has the same possibility of being forgiven and released, of achieving meaningful repair. When I first saw Gilda Shepherd's film, it screamed Yom Kippur to me, because on this day, we spend the whole day reflecting on themes of forgiveness and atonement, release and repair. Starting from Kamonte Carter's story today, I want to ask us to consider the flip side of the forgiveness coin. That is, not how we say, I'm sorry, and apologize when we have done something wrong, but rather, under what circumstances we are willing to grant forgiveness, and to whom? What does it take to appease us individually? On a collective societal level, too, under what circumstances are we willing to grant forgiveness, and to whom? Perhaps you've heard the famous text from Mishnah Yoma that reads as follows. Averot she ben adam lemakom yom hakipurim mechaper. For transgressions between a person and God, Yom Kippur atones. Averot shebein adam lechavero, ein Yom HaKippurim mechaper. For transgressions between one person and another, Yom Kippur does not atone ad sheyiratzeh et chavero, until the individual appeases the other. Yom Kippur, the Mishnah teaches, is the perfect time for us to ask God for forgiveness. But if it's another human being I've hurt or offended or sinned against, and isn't it usually? Yom Kippur can't help me until I've done my own interpersonal homework first. The first step towards achieving kapara, atonement, is appeasing the other person, ad sheyiratzeh et chavero. Appease is not an English word we use very often, so we need to dig in a little deeper to understand what this might mean. That is, what it means to appease someone else, and also what it means for each of us to be appeased. The dictionary offers two definitions for the English word appease. This verb means, one, to pacify or placate someone by acceding to their demands, or two, to relieve or satisfy a demand or a feeling. Appeasing is the human work that goes hand in hand with our Yom Kippur observance. And through this sermon, I want to push gently on all of us, not to feel more guilt or to apologize more, but to work on softening our hearts a bit and becoming more ready to accept apologies. I want us to build our forgiveness capacities on an individual level, on an interpersonal level, and also when it comes to thinking about societal questions like restorative justice and whether Kamanti Carter can ever do anything at all to earn a second chance at life outside prison. In other words, this Yom Kippur, I want us to work on building our appeasement muscle, a muscle that perhaps you didn't even know you had. Last year at Kavanai and Havdalah Club, our older elementary school students studied a text from Pirkei Avot that goes like this. And I acknowledge I'm going to flip around the order of the clauses just a bit as I teach this text. Arba midot badeot. There are four kinds of temperaments, four different types of human beings. Noach lichos v'noach lertzot. Yatzas charo behefsedo. Some people are easy to anger and easy to be appeased. And the text says their gain disappears in their loss. Fly off the handle quickly, settle down quickly, gain and loss offset each other. Kashet lichos v'kashet lirtzot, yatsa hefsedo bischaro. Hard to become angry and hard to be appeased. Their loss disappears in their gain. Again, they offset each other. Noach lichos v'kashe lirtzot rasha. Easy to become angry and hard to be appeased. That's a wicked person, says Pirkei Avot. And finally, kashe lichos v'noach lirtzot chesed. Hard to become angry, slow to anger, and easy to appease. That's a pious person. This is, it seems, the objective. That's what Pirkei Avot wants each of us to strive to be. Slow to anger, patient, not hot-headed, and simultaneously easy to appease. Resilient, ready to let go, to bounce back, to forgive another. If you happen to be a machzor nerd like me, you may recognize that vocabulary not only from Pirkei Avot, but also from our high holiday prayers. In Unetane Tokef, the big liturgical piece that's part of the traditional high holiday Musaf service, the one with the who shall live and who shall die language, in that prayer we continue on by talking about God. And there we describe God as kashe lichos v'noach lirtzot, exactly the same language, slow to anger, and easily appeased. And we continue, for you, God, do not desire a person's death, but rather that one turn from one's path and live. God believes, it seems, in restorative justice. In other words, being slow to anger and easily appeased is a godly quality. And on Yom Kippur, in our prayers, we name that in order to set the goal for ourselves of striving to achieve the same, to become the same. Now, this might sound relatively straightforward until we consider just about any real world case. Because in the real world, and I would say even in our tales and stories and folklore, forgiveness is rarely so simple. I think perhaps this is why we read the story of Jonah on Yom Kippur. I'm guessing that you know the basic tale, that Jonah, the prophet, is commanded by God to get on a ship and go to Nineveh and deliver a message there to the wicked city that the people must repent. Jonah arises and instead flees exactly in the opposite direction. It seems like he wants nothing to do with this mission that God is sending him on. And as he travels away from Nineveh, trying to escape, a storm comes up. And at his request, the other sailors throw him overboard, where he's swallowed by a giant fish and spends 3 days in its belly. He prays inside the belly of the fish, seemingly sincerely, offering gratitude for having been saved. And that's the famous part of the story. But the most striking part of it is actually what happens next. When Jonah arrives in Nineveh in chapter 3, the people of the city listen to his words and repent immediately. They take the whole appeasing God thing all the way. They put on sackcloth and they pray. They change their behavior from king to people, even to the animals of the city. You might think Jonah would feel really successful and accomplished. But instead, he gets angry and irritated, and he deems it a great evil that God has been appeased and has forgiven the city. Accusingly, Jonah lashes out at God, saying, "O Eternal One, is this not what I said while I was still in my own land? I therefore hastened to flee to Tarshish, for I knew that you were a gracious and compassionate God, patient and abounding in kindness, and would relent from punishment." Jonah flings the 13 attributes back at God. "So now, Eternal One," he says, "please take my life, for I would rather die than live." Jonah, the prophet, it turns out, is a stickler for justice. He cannot, does not want to live in a world where the people of Nineveh can be forgiven so easily. The book of Jonah begs the question of whether we're more like Jonah sometimes than we could possibly want to admit. We are quick to anger and slow to appease. We're exactly the opposite of the rabbinic ideal. That is, perhaps we want compassion and forgiveness for ourselves, but somewhere deep down, it's hard for us to grant it to others. We feel like other people should suffer their consequences. We don't always grant second chances. It's easy to feel appalled at Jonah's harshness reading that story, and yet our rabbinic tradition prescribed that we read this text every Yom Kippur, I believe, because they wanted to push that idea that we all play the part of Jonah at times. We all act as gatekeepers. We resist being part of God's plan for a forgiving universe. So how do we allow for change and renewal? How do we make space for second chances and for growth? These questions apply on every level, as we think about ourselves internally, as we think about others and our interpersonal relationships, and as we think about the society that we aim to build together. How can we cultivate within ourselves the ability to forgive more readily, the capacity to be more gracious, and to be more easily appeased? I want to offer three suggestions that might provide a focal point for our internal work this Yom Kippur. Three core capacities that we might think about, visualize, trying to build up within ourselves. The first is the capacity to recognize the humanity of the other. In Colin McCann's book, A Paragon, a book that the Kavanaugh Book Club read last year, but I will admit I was behind and have just finished, he unfurls the story of two fathers, one Palestinian and one Israeli, both of whom have lost a daughter to the violence that surrounds them. Bassam Aramin's 10-year-old daughter, Abir, was shot in the back of her head by a rubber bullet coming out of a grocery store where she went to buy candy one day after school. Rami Elchanan had lost his 14-year-old daughter Smadar in a suicide bombing on Ben Yehuda Street in Jerusalem, where she was shopping with her friends. Each of these two men follow paths throughout the book towards reconciliation, where they strike up an unlikely friendship rooted in their shared grief, that grief which is transformed in essence into a weapon for peace. Each one begins the book in a place of anger and extreme sadness, craving revenge on some level. And slowly, 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 we watch as they find the power of words. As a bumper sticker in the book says, "Ze lo yigamer ad shenidaber," this will not end until we learn to speak with one another. Each one ultimately becomes appeasable and appeased, that is, becomes capable of viewing the enemy as human and of granting forgiveness. Anger dehumanizes in the same way that prison does. Understanding someone else's struggles, their perspective, rehumanizes and gives a foundation for building upon as we seek to become more forgiving. This Yom Kippur, I have a strong feeling that if these two men, Rami and Bassam, could do it in the most extreme of circumstances, I too can work to cultivate within myself the capacity to seek the humanity in every person I encounter. My second suggestion is that we work on cultivating equanimity within ourselves. As we've already learned, Pirkei Avot asks us each to strive to be kasheh lichos v'noach lirtzot, slow to anger, easy to appease. The Derech Chaim is a commentary on Pirkei Avot written by the Rabbi Judah Lau, the 16th century Maharal of Prague. And on this Pirkei Avot text, the Derech Chaim commentary says, "If a person is hard to anger but easy to appease, such a person is certainly someone with equilibrium and straightness. And therefore, it is hard for him to veer from the equilibrium. But if he does veer, it is easy for him to return to the equilibrium, which is his place, since he is righteous and straight." Reading this text, I visualize an inflatable, weighted punching bag. Can you imagine what I mean? One that has enough mass and heft to its base that even when you hit it or knock it off balance, it returns to its upright position time and time again. Rabbi Lau is saying that this is what we should aspire to be like, to be solid and stable and composed enough at our core that we can regain equilibrium easily when we are knocked off course. This is the quality of equanimity. It's a state of psychological stability that enables us to be maximally forgiving. A kind of solidity that we can spend this day, this Yom Kippur, working on internally. And my third suggestion for what we might work on this Yom Kippur is that we can aspire to cultivate within ourselves a kind of softness, the opposite of a hardness or a harshness. There's a beautiful renewal teaching that Rabbi Rachel Barenblatt shares in her description of a Yom Kippur that she spent at Eilat Chaim in 2004. She writes, and I quote, "One of the refrains of the holiday is, on Rosh Hashanah it is inscribed, and on Yom Kippur it is sealed. B'Rosh Hashanah yikatevun, uv'yom tzom Kippur yechatemun. From this refrain, we can intuit that while the heart may be solid on Rosh Hashanah so that words could be inscribed on it, on Yom Kippur, it must be soft like wax in order to be sealed." I love that. On Yom Kippur, it must be soft like wax in order to be sealed. So, she concludes, it is incumbent on us to soften our hearts. In order for us to be noach lirtzot, easy to appease, to have that godly quality, we have to cultivate just the right amount of solidity that we can bounce back, and just the right degree of softness. This Yom Kippur, this might be our kavana when we put our fists on our chest for the vidui, the confessional prayers. That there's a knocking at the door, a dofik, badelet quality of trying to open up the heart and awaken it because it is solid and we are solid. And also, at the same time, there's a massage quality, a softening, a reminder that we are pliable and have incredible human capacity for growth and change. We are capable of softening and taking on new shape. Now, I don't want to pretend that any of this is simple. The Talmud tells us lots of stories about rabbis who offend one another and have to ask for forgiveness. I will save these stories for another year, but let me assure you that they are messy stories. In all of them, by the way, the Hebrew word for appease is not liratzot, but lifayes. This Hebrew word, pies, is really an interesting word. It is one that contains within it a sense of the arbitrary, like the word lottery in contemporary Israel, pius. Somehow, being appeased in these rabbinic texts has to do with arbitrating or deciding. And perhaps this word, pies, hints that sometimes this is arbitrary, not logical, whose feelings get hurt and whose don't. Which of us feel ready to grant forgiveness and which of us do not. In other words, appeasement is deeply subjective. Even if I've offended two friends in the exact same way, it might take different methods, different words, different modes of righting a wrong, different aims of repair to try to appease each of the two. And our tradition teaches also that it's not always the right time to appease, even when it is Yom Kippur. Elsewhere in Pirkei Avot, we learn that one should not try to appease a friend during a period of anger. We also can't be appeased or appease others when a wrong is ongoing and still being perpetuated. So for example, this year, I'm not willing to let go right now of my anger at politicians and radio hosts and others who are spreading disinformation and decrying masks and vaccine mandates while a pandemic is still raging and people are still dying. My willingness to be appeased has limits, and it cannot happen while harm is still playing out. And yet, despite the complexity, despite the limitations, I believe that Yom Kippur gives us the gift of the power to transform and grow, to do this ourselves internally, and to see this capacity in one another, and also to bake this quality into the society that we are building together. On a very fundamental level, I believe that we will be better human beings in the world. The world we build together will be a better one if we can exercise our appeasement muscle more often, starting from building our own capacities within to humanize one another, to cultivating equanimity and solidness, and to softening our own hearts. I don't know if Kamanti Carter will ever be awarded a second chance by our state. Next month, Kavanah and many other Seattle organizations and congregations will band together to screen Gilda Shepherd's film and to engage in cross-community conversations about it. We will learn more about restorative justice and education and legislative change. We will certainly get to speak with Gilda Shepherd, the filmmaker, and we may even have an opportunity to speak with Kamanti Carter himself about the transformation he has experienced during his period of incarceration. And even more importantly, about the world he's trying to build through transformative educational programs, both inside and outside of state prison walls. I absolutely encourage you to join in and to be part of this work, which is at once deeply spiritual and introspective, and also simultaneously justice-focused and change-oriented. The internal and the external are one in the same. This Yom Kippur, as we spend the coming day together in prayer, my kavana, my intention, is to stretch myself internally to come closer to that high bar that Pirkei Avot in our liturgy sets for us, of training ourselves step by step to be kashe lichos v'noach lirtzot, slow to anger and easy to appease. Of course, I know that it's inevitable that I will not hit the mark 100% of the time. but that's where I set my sights for this year. This year, I will strive to see the humanity in each and every person I encounter. This year, I will strive to find equanimity, the quiet solidity of balance. This year, I will soften my own heart to be better able to tolerate change in myself and in you and in others. This year, I will exercise my appeasement muscle. In this year, may we be sealed for goodness and for blessing. I wish you a Gemar Chatima Tovah.